Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio. If you haven't heard yet, President Obama will be holding his first post-election news conference at 1:30 this afternoon. We will carry it live here on WNYC and on our politics website. It's afreecountry.org. Another bit of news is that Nancy Pelosi will continue to lead the Democratic minority in the House. And Angus King, the newly elected independent senator from Maine, announced that he will caucus with the Democrats. So as Congress stares down the fiscal cliff, we are joined by the Takeaways Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick to talk about all of this. Hey, Todd.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
Good. And let's start with Nancy Pelosi. Here she is from her news conference this morning.
My colleagues made it very clear. In fact, I think they must have coordinated with each other because their message was clear. Don't even think of leaving. That was what I got over and over and over and over again. I thought, is this a coincidence or what?
So, Todd, it's actually pretty unusual that somebody who's been the speaker and then their party is thrown out of a majority even remains as minority leader for one term. Looks like she's going to do it for two.
It is unusual. And at the same time, Brian, it's also unusual for a leader of a party in Congress to have as much influence over her colleagues and as much fundraising prowess as Nancy Pelosi does. So she's an exception in that way to stay on for two terms as minority leader after being speaker. That might help explain it.
What's the nature of her influence and on what does she tend to wield it?
Well, Nancy Pelosi's influence is broad and deep in the Democratic caucus. Let's talk about money, okay?
Uh-huh.
Fundraising is important in this game, and Nancy Pelosi is fantastic at it. She travels the country. She has a deep and strong political operation. She travels the country when Congress is not in session and tends to raise many strong millions of dollars from high money Democratic donors and from the Democratic base in the environmental community, increasingly in the gay, lesbian, transgender, and bisexual community, and other groups in the Democratic base. And that's important to people. She passes that money out to other members for their campaigns. She raises money, most importantly, perhaps, for the Democratic National Committee, which can then trickle the money down and rain it down on members for their campaigns and for advertising, and for the DCCC, which is the campaign arm of House Democrats. So she raises money for all of these efforts, and she does it very well. That can't be underestimated. As a leader these days, the House Minority Leader is a much, much, much less important and a much different job than Speaker. She's not in the majority. She doesn't set the agenda. She's not passing legislation, although she'll have a lot to say about fiscal cliff stuff if and when a deal gets made here. Her role as Minority Leader is much more as billboard, face of the party, messenger. And she's a very effective messenger. Yes, she gets the backs up of Republicans. Yes, they love to hate her. And yes, they raise money off of her. But they just won a big election, Democrats did. And Nancy Pelosi is a billboard for a kind of progressivism that Democrats feel is on the upswing, if mm-hmm. not in a resurgence right now. And I think that has a lot to do with why they kept her in. And the last thing I'll say about it, they are busy now heralding the fact that they have the most diverse House caucus in the history of the body, the most women, the most minorities, gay members, a bisexual member, ethnically diverse, you name it. And as a woman member, as the first speaker, she exemplifies that as well as anybody else. And I think that has something to do with it, too.
You know, you mentioned the fiscal cliff and what role she might have to play in it as minority leader. And I guess one of the things we'll hear from the president at his news conference is this number $1.5 or $1.6 trillion in new revenue and new taxes on the highest income Americans. That's twice as much as he was apparently looking for in that grand bargain with Boehner last year. But he has also not promised his liberal base that he won't make changes to Medicare and to Social Security and to Medicaid. And so if there is some kind of bargain, maybe a Simpson Bowles style bargain, which actually liberals don't like very much. You know, there's a lot of pushback from the Paul Krugmans and Nancy Pelosi's of the world against the so-called Simpson Bowles compromise. Is she going to hold this up? Is she going to be an issue, or is she going to kind of fall in line with the president so they get what they want on taxes?
Well, that's one of the key questions. Boy, if Penn Jillette wants to see sausage being made, as he mentioned, he should come here. I think we do it even better than he does, although he's great at it. Nancy Pelosi will have your description of the situation and entitlements and those sort of core Democratic policies is accurate. And the reason why Nancy Pelosi will have a role here in situations where minority leaders often don't, right? I mean, usually what happens is the speaker passes a bill with his conference and Democrats can hang out on the sidelines and watch. That's sort of how the House works. It doesn't work the same way as the Senate. Well, what's likely to happen here, and we're speculating, but what's really likely to happen here, because the deal that eventually gets made, whether that's in the next few weeks, unlikely, or sometime next year, more likely, has to be bipartisan. There's no way to do it based on numbers without both parties putting some skin in the game. And that means that John Boehner, whatever deal he makes with President Obama, is going to need support from some Republicans and a whole lot of Democrats. That's the likely scenario, because neither President Obama nor John Boehner will get everything that they want. Nancy Pelosi's role in this is pretty much as you described it, is to stand behind the president, I think, and constantly remind him, both quietly and publicly, loudly, that he is a Democratic president, that he is making a deal that is a generational deal, and that is a political ideology deal, really for both sides. Republicans are being asked to consider raising taxes, which is completely unkosher to them. Democrats are being asked to deal away some of the value of Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, completely unkosher to them. So I think part of the reason why you're going to see Barack Obama come out with this number of $1.6 trillion, which is not a new number, Brian. That's his old budget number from a year ago. I don't expect anyone to remember that, but it's the new old number.
Uh-huh.
But it's a bigger number, and it's a tougher number. The White House seems to have learned a lesson that liberals thought they didn't learn in dealing on health care and on debt limit, which is you come out with the number that's bigger than what you expect to get. Your opening bid should be your fantasy number, and then you deal backwards from that, not the other way around. I think the president probably knows he won't get $1.6 trillion in the end, but that's what he's opening with, and Nancy Pelosi will be there with her votes and with her ideology and with the ideological bent of the Democratic conference, which is more liberal than it used to be, saying Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid, make sure you keep the pressure on to tax the rich. That's why we're here, Mr. President.
And listeners, when we're finished with Todd in a couple of minutes, we'll take your calls on what questions you would ask the president now that he's finally holding a news conference. I say finally, you know, we used to hold Bush to account for not holding more availabilities with the media. Obama's not really any better. He hasn't had a real news conference since March. And Jake Tapper was here before, the ABC News senior White House correspondent, Todd. And,
yeah.
And he was saying he scheduled his book tour. He wrote this book about Afghanistan. And he scheduled his book tour for this week because he thought he would be done with the election and the president's post-election news conference last week. But the president is doing this later than presidents ever do it. So he got caught today not being able to go to this news conference because he's on a book tour. And the president wasn't acting the way the presidents usually do after they get reelected. Is there any political gain for Obama in putting this news conference off by about a week after the election?
Well, maybe what it allowed him to do, and I share Jake's frustration, even though he has a much deeper role at the White House than I. Hey, maybe it gives somebody else at ABC a chance for once, since Jake does such a great job over there. I think the one thing it did allow the president to do is come back to Washington, and we got a lot of opening bids on the table in terms of the fiscal cliff. The president did make a statement last week, even though he didn't take any questions on sort of his election victory. What it allowed him to do was sort of skip the let's recap my election victory, let's recap my mandate to the extent that it exists, and got right to the business of the fiscal cliff. Here are our priorities. He sort of made these blanket statements last week standing in front of a group of, you know, quote-unquote kind of real people who exemplified what Democrats want to do with the fiscal reordering of the government here. John Boehner made a couple of statements, too, and was forced to go first. Other people in this game have gone first. So maybe the president has just found a tactical advantage in waiting people out, I suppose.
So what I was starting to say before I interrupted myself with that question was, listeners, we're going to take your calls in just a minute here when we finish up with Todd with what you would ask the president. 212-433-WNYC. It's been a long-awaited news conference. What would you ask him if you could ask him one question? 212-433-9692, or you could post it to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show or tweet at Brian Lehrer or use our Facebook page, Brian Lehrer WNYC. And, you know, you tell me, do you want to ask about taxes, politics, cheating generals, letting Colorado set up marijuana stores, how bad a candidate was Mitt Romney anyway? Whatever you want, 212-433-WNYC. Tell us what you would like to hear asked. And who knows, maybe, you know, somebody from ABC who is covering the news conference will be hearing it. Or Todd, do you get to ask a question today? You going there?
They never call on me. You know, we got to increase the clout of the Takeaway and the Brian Lehrer Show. When we're in the East Room.
That's right. We're gonna get John Hockenberry on their case.
Oh boy,
to read them the Riot Act. And
now you're scaring them.
That's right. So we talked about Pelosi. Let's go to the other side of the aisle. Congressman Paul Ryan, who, of course, was the vice presidential nominee, gave his first national interview to ABC's Jonathan Carl, and part of that was on World News Tonight yesterday and Good Morning America today. And he was asked about this idea of raising taxes on the wealthy to help close the deficit. And here's a little bit of what Paul Ryan said.
You can do that through loopholes without compromising growth. But what we have learned, history and economics, is that if you keep raising tax rates on job creators, it will cost us jobs.
But could you see yourself supporting a plan that raises tax rates?
You know, I'm
on
not,
the top
I'm not
2%?
For raising tax rates. I've
so you won't
this,
support a plan?
I don't want to get into negotiating with the media, but I do not support raising tax rates.
So how much clout as House Budget Committee, but now vanquished vice presidential nominee, does Paul Ryan come out of the election with on this?
The grassroots Paul Ryan for Speaker movement has already started, Brian. And if listeners want to get on Twitter and on the internet and look for that, they can, and you'll see he has some support for that. That's not going to happen. Paul Ryan already had a lot of clout in the House as a budgeteer and sort of the philosophical basis of Republicans' position here. And he plays an interesting role now, even though John Boehner is still the Speaker, Eric Cantor is still the Majority Leader. Paul Ryan and John Boehner sort of represent different parts of the Republican philosophy. And there may be, and we're sort of reading smoke signals here, but there may be deals that John Boehner would make, being much more of a pragmatist, than Paul Ryan wouldn't have made. John Boehner still will be the Speaker and still will be the one making that deal. There is a leadership race deep in the ranks of the Republican leadership that we don't have to go too deeply into, but it's between a Boehner ally named Kathy McMorris Rodgers and a real conservative named Tom Price, two members running for chairman of the Republican conference. I only bring it up because that might tell us quite a bit at the end of the day today about where the sentiments of the House Republican conference post-election is now. Kathy McMorris Rodgers is seen as conservative, but much more moderate, an ally of Boehner, and a little bit more aligned with the pragmatist wing of the party. Tom Price of Georgia, seen as a real staunch conservative, what Mitt Romney would have called a severe conservative, rated probably the most conservative member of the House. If he wins that race, that will tell you a lot about where rank-and-file Republicans think this very debate ought to go, and might shed some light on that question that you're asking, sort of between the Ryan philosophy and what might be the Boehner philosophy as they enter into deal making here.
That's a really good insight into some of the dynamics in the House. I didn't know a lot of that. And here's how Ryan himself put it when Jonathan Carl asked him about his role in the House now.
My role is to continue to be a champion of ideas, to help our party be the reform party that shows how we get economic growth.
So, Todd, we're going to take a break in a minute, and then you're going to stay with us, and maybe you'll tell us how the president might answer some of the questions that our listeners are going to pose. But just one other thing on the politics of the fiscal cliff. The Speaker Boehner says he would be open to additional revenue, but not higher rates. And I haven't seen it reported this way, but I would have to guess that is already a sign of a possible deal, because the Romney-Ryan budget during the campaign was revenue neutral. They kept making a point of that. They kept making a point of that as a way to argue that this is safe for people. Don't worry, it'll be revenue neutral. We'll raise the same amount of money to run the government and, you know, the popular programs as before. But they're going beyond that now, or Boehner is, saying, I would accept not just revenue neutral, but higher revenues by closing deductions. Is that a sign that he's willing to take a step?
Yes and no. It is rhetorically, it is different from what we heard before the election, that we are willing to essentially have that part of government on the revenue side larger. And before, Republicans were not saying that. They were only really talking about spending cuts, right? And that was part of the whole debate we had over the debt limit and Biden talks and all that stuff from last year. So on the one hand, yes, revenue is new and it is a new flexibility. On the other hand, no, because here's why. All of these statements about we'll accept revenue or where the taxing should be, there have to be numbers behind this. And the ultimate goal and the ultimate need is deficit reduction. That's why they're doing all of this, is for deficit reduction. And the problem with revenue only, with no tax rates, from the president's perspective, one is philosophical. We want the rich to pay more. We want everyone to see it. We want those rates to go back to the Clinton rates, the 39.6 for the top earners. But it's also a numbers game, and the president will probably say that's math. The problem with it is that just doing loopholes, most of the tax analysts around town have said, yes, you can increase revenue by keeping tax rates the same, by keeping the marginal rates the same. If you just close a lot of the loopholes and make the rich pay more on loopholes, yes, you can do it, but it doesn't net you nearly what you need. It doesn't net you nearly as much as income tax rates. And if your ultimate goal is deficit reduction, it just can't get you there. You kind of need both.
So there's a fight ahead, no doubt. The Takeaways Washington correspondent Todd Zwillich will stay with us as we take your calls on what you would ask the president in his first news conference this afternoon. 212-433-WNYC. We'll put you on the air right after this.